This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurboNStrending.com, BlackStarLabs.com, and by StrengthCoach.com. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 124 for the week of Sunday, February 22nd, 2009. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off, with us is Jonathan Fast of acceleratedstrength.com and jonathanfast.blogspot.com. John, how's it going? I know you've been really busy blogging this past week. I think that's like 2 in 1 week.
I think it was 2 in 1 week. It was crazy. Wow.
Have you been able to sleep much? Or
you know what? I've been pulling all-nighters to get those things done.
Good.
It's been a challenge, but it's a lot of coffee and a lot of love and dedication.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Next, we have Tony Gentilcore of the Boston Herald Step Up blog and GentilcoreTraining.com. Tony, what's up?
Not much, man. Good to be back.
Yes. And we have Lee Peel of AvidityFitness.net as well and the Fat Loss Troubleshooter. What's up, Lee?
Not much. Excited about the show today.
Indeed. Well, we're going to really just kick it off immediately by talking about a blog post that I had on the FitCast.com because just seconds as we were recording the off-topic discussion, I got an email from Steven about an article in the New York Times. And first, I'm going to quickly mention what that blog post was. It was the clip from Oprah where Gwyneth Paltrow was on the show, and she was talking about how she is so slim and how she does it. Oprah was looking for tips on how to lose weight from Gwyneth Paltrow. And the interview ended up going into Gwyneth's workout. And as we talked about in the past, ad nauseum, that she trains with Tracy Anderson, world-renowned celebrity trainer and god and genius of the fitness world. She's putting us out of business. And she went through part of the workout. And if you guys don't mind, I'll briefly play a little bit of the video clip for the audience out there. And just in a related note, as that loads up. Oh, here we go.
So this is my pint-sized miracle, as I call her, Tracy Anderson. She is like, she's the exercise genius of all time. I work out 6 days a week, and if we're not in the same place, I do the DVDs. I work freaking hard. It's no accident.
So Gwyneth and I started with the band system. I developed the band system for Madonna specifically, which we used to warm up the arms and wear out some of the muscles that I wanted to wear out. It just offers me a new way of getting to the muscle and the angles that I need to get a little bit deeper. And then we go to arms without any resistance. And now I'm taking 3-pound weights, only 3-pound weights. No woman should lift more than 3 pounds. So now we're going to do some more arm rotations with 3-pound weights. I don't count reps.
I hold my 30-pound son in my left arm all day. So this one is like sags lower than this one. So she makes me do more arms on one side.
Gwyneth, she's a dream.
I'd pay her for that.
No. Well,
Okay, that's kind of all I want to hear. But just getting the gist of it, kind of briefly went through one of their workouts, and just to summarize a little bit more, that she trains roughly 2 hours a day, 2 to 3 hours a day, 6 days a week. And that's what she must, and she trains in 80 degree heat as well. I forgot to add that in the clip. But on a related note, before we do talk about this, the New York Times just reported that Gwyneth Paltrow and Tracy Anderson plan to open up a gym together. So they're teaming up to fuck up more women. So I'm going to pass this off to Lee first, since you know Lee and Tracy have a great relationship, and I'm sure she can clear a lot of this stuff up.
You know, like, I listen to that. I know that we talk about this a lot and everything, and some could say that we're maybe beating a dead horse, but I saw that they were opening up a gym. I don't know where I read it, or maybe if they were just talking about it and this actually confirms it, but I think my problem with it is not so much, because I don't have a problem with women wanting to maintain very low body weights in a healthy manner, or different styles of training. You know, I know women who just do yoga. I know women who just do certain kinds of things. My problem is not so much with women wanting to have certain kinds of bodies. My problem is with the manner in which that it's described and told. If you want to do certain things, you can do them. That's fine. But be truthful about what occurs. Like, I don't know what the fucking accessory muscle is. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't know, like, some of the things that she says, they're absolutely not true. And there's some of the reasonings are absolutely just crap. I mean, 3 pounds, like, no one lifts. Even if you aren't trying to gain mass, you can still lift more than 3 pounds and do body composition changes and occur in certain. So it's just ridiculous. And I think my problem is not so much with certain women not wanting to walk around with a certain type of look, because I actually work with people that do that and we do that, but it's more the crap that's behind why it's told. I mean, take on off topic, we were talking about what's her name, Jennifer, what was her name,
Jennifer
Stana. Okay, there is no way that if you look at that female, that, you know, the majority of females that I work with that have that kind of body type, the majority of them do a very kind of base training. They do a lot of body weight work. They do a lot of stretching. They do a lot of yoga. They don't do a lot of heavy conditioning. A lot of the women that I work with that look like that. But there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's when you take it to the aspect of lying and trying to scare people of lifting weights or doing certain things that becomes a problem. And I don't think that the issue is Gwyneth Paltrow and Tracy Anderson opening up a gym that's tailoring to women who want to have a certain kind of body type and want to maintain a certain kind of look. It's the problem is that they lie about the things they do or they don't understand it. I would be curious to talk about that. Like, I would rather discuss that instead of beat down necessarily Tracy Anderson, but discuss, you know, the continuing dogma that we have with making women feel like that if they don't lift weights that it's a problem, but also making women feel like that if they do lift weights it's a problem. I think we just need to be truthful all about this, and maybe it's because I've been arguing about this all week long with people, but I, you know, like, it's just, it's an issue.
Well, it was just the reason why, you know, it struck a chord. Like, normally I blogged like 3 times that week, and I usually do it once a week, but it struck a chord because, again, it's just stuff that's going to the mass market, and there's potentially, I don't know, what is there, tens of millions of women that watch Oprah every week, and that they're getting this information when it's coming up to the point that in the year where everyone wants to lose weight, and, you know, they're going to start wanting to get the best information. They figure they can get it from us, quote, celebrity trainers, because celebrities are going to hire the most knowledgeable, best trainers out there that are going to get them the fastest results, you know, in, you know, you think the least amount of time, but when you're talking about exercising for 12 hours a week, it's kind of ruining the point, isn't it?
This is what I say about celebrities and celebrity trainers. And because you're exactly right, I think. I mean, people think, well, the celebrities must hire the best trainers. Celebrities don't know anything more than anyone else does. They just happen to be in the public spotlight. And the best way to consider that is, you know, for the listeners, obviously the listeners are hearing us, so we hope that they're a little bit more knowledgeable than maybe the everyday person. But for the listeners, you know, take your parents or your sister that doesn't work out, or your boss, or whoever it is, and suddenly put them in front of a camera. This is who you're dealing with. Just because they're a celebrity doesn't make them more knowledgeable or even seeking more knowledgeable people. They're buying into the same garbage and crap that's being spewed by an idiot like Tracy Anderson or anyone else, you know, that might be trying to make a fast buck and has no concept or clue of what they're doing. It, you know, that's why people don't understand it. That's why Oprah doesn't understand it. Oprah just wants ratings. She wants, you know, whatever. I'm not even necessarily going to say that Oprah doesn't try to do research or homework, or at least the producers or whatever, but who are they either? And I think we talked about this, you know, a couple of weeks ago or something about When you read something in a magazine, these are journalists. They're not exercise scientists. So they're assuming that the people that they're interviewing are more knowledgeable about the subject than they are. And when you look like at this moron, Tracy Anderson, she knows nothing. And they are being duped, and everyone's being duped, and they're all drinking the Kool-Aid. So she just drives me nuts. Absolutely nuts. And the more I hear about this garbage and crap, the more it's unreal.
Yeah, I think we're going to make a pact. You know, again, I didn't necessarily want to bring this up again. We'll kind of agree to not really mention her name ever again. It will be the name that's never spoken on this show. Unless, like, she ends up doing something incredibly stupid that we can just laugh about. Tony, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I agree. We've, like Lee said, I think at times we're beating a dead horse when we keep bringing up her name. So, you know, I can't really add anything that Lee or John haven't brought up already. So I hope our listeners know better. I mean, half the time it's you guys who are listening that are telling us about it. So it's nice to know that there are people out there who realize that, you know, this is less than spectacular information being spewed out there. And it's nice to know that there are people out there who recognize that. So, I mean, I got a few emails, you know, through my blog and just through my regular email from people sending me links to the New York Times article. And I blogged about that clip that you played, Kevin, a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, half the time I never really come across it personally. It's usually somebody sending it to me, and it's usually more than one person. So it is definitely nice. And kudos go out to our listeners that are a little bit more of a knowledgeable base than, you know, a lot of the Nimrods out there. So it is nice to know. But yeah, I'm done with Tracy Anderson. I mean, I think people are done with listening to us talk about it too, but certainly if she ever does anything stupid in the future, I'm sure we'll say something. But yeah, this is just absolutely retarded.
Let's move to a little bit of a brighter subject and something that I'll be blogging about, I'm sure Lee and I will be talking about, but Lee is helping me with my nutrition and getting to... We're looking at, you know, 12-10% body fat.
Nice.
He's going to get lean. He's going to get ripped.
Sexification of Kevin.
Well, I think this is, you know...
You can't take my title. We did the project Kevin get sexified. You can't take project Kevin get sexified. It's already been taken.
We have to come up with a video game. I wasn't going to make a video game reference.
Okay.
Whatever. But anyways, I thought it would be, you know, something that we can talk about a little bit more in the future, because I think this is partly why a lot of us, you know, go and get help, because it's a lot of, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And also it's good to have, like, I know what to eat, and I know what to tell people to eat and how to eat and, you know, to calculate things, but it's much you're much more inclined to follow things when you have the responsibility, and I love how Lee has gone through and sets up really checks and balances to make sure that, you know, clients are following through with the nutrition habits and following through with the caloric intake guidelines. And it's just I don't know if this is making any sense, but I actually talked with Cass a little bit about this yesterday, and just talking about overall responsibility. And I think that's why obviously a lot of people go out there and they get help with trainers and nutritionists, things like that. But I don't know if Willie wants to say anything. But
it makes perfect sense. It's all about accountability, you know?
That's the word always forget, accountability. I can't ever remember that.
Accountability is so crucial. You know, trainers need trainers. You know, like, we need help. Like, I was talking to John on the phone, and I was asking him about my ankle and my leg. I mean, it's totally messed up, and he gave me some great advice. And, you know, I have a hard time eating or overeating sometimes. I need people to, like, keep me in check. I mean, luckily, like, can't talk about fat loss and be fat, but, you know, that's kind of accountability on itself right there. But, you know, you need that accountability. And with my clients particularly, like, I just make sure that it's foolproof as possible, because I have found the best way to achieve results in training and nutrition is to hold people's hands, so to speak, like, no guesswork. They don't have to figure anything out. There's no mistakes or slip ups able to happen. So I think that it's great. And I'm looking for my next accountability person right now, actually. I think I need somebody, because I'm getting fat. I need to unfat myself.
And, you know, another point of that too, and it's not just accountability, but I think it is also expertise. I mean, we get this idea that, you know, I know that I've had this plenty of times, and I bet you all have too. You get a new client, and they're asking you every question under the sun. And the fact of the matter is that, all right, we have certain areas of expertise, hopefully, and there are other areas that we won't be as good at. And we shouldn't really be expected to be as good in those areas either. Otherwise, you become a jack of all trades, but an expert of none. So, you know, I've had – Cass has helped me with my nutrition. You know, Lee is helping Kevin, and it makes perfect sense, because these are two people that have their expertise in this area. They know a lot more than I do. Why would I be trying to make up something that's going to really be half-assed at best, and maybe not even because of a lack of effort, but just because of a lack of knowledge? This isn't really where, you know, I would focus my attention. But we all kind of can discuss these things, and we get questions all the time, and we're able to discuss them. But if you ask me, who do I want to answer a nutrition question, me or Lee, I want Lee to answer it, you know? And I think that's exactly it. I think a lot of times we get this kind of ego involved where it's like, well, I guess I should know everything, and why don't I know that? But the fact of the matter is there's so much information. The people at the highest levels that research this stuff for a living don't have all the answers. So why would I have all the answers when I'm, you know, a gym trainer, or I'm a, you know, a nutritionist but doesn't have a background in exercise, you know, whatever the case might be. So you seek out the best people, you know, and you'll get the best results time and time again. And that doesn't necessarily mean one individual. So yeah, trainers need nutritionists, trainers need other trainers, physical therapists need trainers, trainers need physical therapists, and you just build that relationship. I've always found that amazing on forums too, where someone will come in and ask a question and they'll get slammed for not doing their own research. But why should they be doing their own research? They're asking someone else that's done the research. That's the concept, you know. So don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, that's and if you're knowledgeable in the area, don't think that you know everything.
Yeah, and I bought a food scale, a digital one.
Nice.
Which I was playing around with last night quite a bit. It was fun. So
it's a really hard diet. He's like, and I'm really impressed with Kevin's he didn't question anything. He was just like, cool, you know. And it's tough. Like, this is not what I would put, you know, a stereotypical person on, but I know that he has the kind of diligence and dedication to go through with it. So that's why I think he's really going to do a good job.
And I have to, because now Lee has compromising pictures of me.
Damn right I do.
So those are practically, you know, yeah, we're not going to get into that. All right, well, that's pretty much it. And I'll be blogging about that on the fitcast.com, and just, you guys can, I don't know, follow along, and we'll probably do some before and after postings as well to see how things turn out. But it should work out well, and I'm very excited. As I was talking to Cass about, it was actually stemming to that Splenda discussion that we had, the artificial sweetener discussion and the gut bacteria that we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago. And Cass actually called me, and we literally had poop talk for about 20 minutes while I was doing clients yesterday. And she's like, Kevin, I'm not going to try to be weird, but we're going to talk about poop for 20 minutes. And that's what we did. And we started talking a lot about, we have very similar issues, Cass and I, when it comes to our guts. And I'm I just ordered some, you know, special active bacteria that they send to you in a chilled box with dry ice and crap. So hopefully I'll be getting, you know, some extra special effects and a healthier gut because of it. So I'll probably talk about that as well. It's good stuff. There's like stuff that costs $75, but I got the cheaper stuff.
Yeah, stuff is really expensive, but What does your poo say about you, Kevin?
It does. You know, it does. It says a lot. You know,
says a lot.
Wow.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with the voicemail.
We're ending it on poo.
Yeah, we will. And we're going to be right back with a mailbag. We have some voicemails, and we're going to wrap it up with a recap of the Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning Seminar that we attended last week. And I hope everyone enjoyed that Chad Waterbury interview. If you didn't check that out, head back one episode where we talked about his new book, Huge in a Hurry, including the state of the fitness industry. We talked about that a little bit, went on a little rat hole diatribe there. So... We'll be right back. If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly turbulence training website where you can get a new program every single month. Our first voicemail is about creatine, so let's check that first voicemail right now as I play this.
Hey guys, my name is Sarah and I love your show. I'm actually calling with a few questions I hope you guys could discuss. The first has to do with creatine, which I know has been discussed on the show a lot already, but and I've read Jen and Cassandra's article, which was really enlightening and certainly helpful. But I wanted to know if it's the kind of thing that once you start, you have to continue with indefinitely to see the benefits, or basically, is there any long-term benefit if you just take it for, you know, the short term, like 6 months, or will you lose everything after that? I also wanted to know if you guys could recommend how I could find a good trainer. I live in the suburbs north of Manhattan and was really excited to see that Cassandra is right over in Connecticut, and then I checked Google Maps and realized she's like 2 hours away, so it's a little far. Anyways, if you guys had any recommendations for finding someone who lives in my area and really knows what they're doing, that would be really helpful. The other thing, just a more general question, I was wondering if in the future you would consider possibly doing a show with more nutrition tips for vegans. I've listened to the ones with Coach Dose, but I'd be interested to hear him talk more about what supplements he recommends, what would be the best sources of protein, because I think I rely a little too much on soy right now. Also, everyone goes on and on about the greatness of fish oil, so I'd be curious to know what would be, you know, the next best thing for people who stay away from animal products. If you're not going to take fish oil, what would be good to take in place of that? Anyways, that's it. So thanks again for putting on such a wonderful program each week. And I'm really psyched that Lee Peel is becoming a regular now, because I've always enjoyed all your advice too. So yeah, thanks again, everyone. Bye.
Okay, so we have like 15 questions to that voicemail, but we'll break them down one by one, and we'll shoot the first one off to Lee about creatine.
Kevin, I don't remember the question.
Okay, well, basically, if someone takes creatine for 6 months and then they stop taking creatine, will they lose the benefits that they attain during those 6 months, or the gains that they attain during those 6 months?
I'm just going to answer it like without getting into any mumbo jumbo.
Perfect.
No. Okay. Like it's not relevant.
And anyone know any good trainers in the New York area?
That was a very succinct answer, Lee. No.
She's so happy that you're on regularly now.
I know, right?
Question, you know?
I'll give real quick. You know, any creatine helps during training, but it's not like you don't have to have it anyway. You're not really going to lose any benefit to not using it. It's just an extra additive. It's helped. So you should be fine, and you can jump back on the trainer or whatever whenever you want. How about that? Is that a little bit better?
Sure. But there's no reason to stop taking it.
Yeah, there's no reason to stop taking it either. I'm just saying, like, if you stop taking it, are you going to run into any problems? No, you're not going to run into any problems if you stop taking it, and you can start taking it again anytime you want. I don't know why, but you know. So we can hit other questions. That was just, no, it's not going to cause any problems. So
perfect. In terms of trainers in the New York area, do you guys have any recommendations on how to find a good trainer, whether it be in New York or whether it be in Alaska?
I'll just say that there are, I guess there are a few decent trainer locators you can get on Google. I know the MSCA has one that's contacted me a few times of people looking for trainers in my area. John, being he's in that area, would be a good choice. I don't know how close she is to him, but I tend to have – Eric and myself tend to have a running tab of contacts that we have throughout the country. So if she's willing to email me, I can see if depending on where she is in New York – I think she said Manhattan – that I could see if I have any contacts in Manhattan near her that I could shoot her way. So I'd be happy to help her out with it in that regard. But as far as an overall general answer, you could just go like Google trainer locator and go from there. And then from there, obviously, we get in the question of whether or not that trainer is qualified for you, blah, blah, blah. But as far as finding one, you can go through some of those trainer locator programs.
And don't be afraid to try them out. You know, a lot of clubs have either, you know, consultation sessions where you can ask them a lot of questions or like tri-packs where you get three mini sessions for pretty cheap. So
I mean, that's all I'm saying. It's like, yeah, you can certainly go to a New York sports club or anything like that, or a Bally's, and ask to work with a trainer, because most of the time you are going to get a free complimentary session with a trainer, maybe even two.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it goes into a whole other discussion on how to find a trainer. I know Lee blogged about this, I think, 2 weeks ago. She had a really good blog post on that. So I would point her in that direction as far as when you are face-to-face with a trainer, what to look for. Like, you know, their appearance, their demeanor, their professionalism, whether or not they take you through an actual postural assessment and gear towards your needs, and, you know, individualization. I mean, we can go on and on and on about that. But certainly, yeah, she could just as easily go to a local gym in her area and ask about working with a trainer in that gym.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing as Tony. I think we've all blogged about, you know, what to look for in a trainer and things like that. So you definitely check out the blogs, and just like everyone that blogs at one point writes down what they think is important, you know, in a trainer. So you can look for things like that.
All right. And the last question about vegans or having Dose back on, I'm sure we can have this more, you know, if you have any specific questions regarding to vegans, we can always answer that in the mailbag, but I'm sure we'll have Dose on again in the future. It's always good to talk about, especially collegiate training with Dose. So, I'll definitely see if we can get him back on, and one of the discussions that we will have will be about nutrition for vegans. And fish oil. We talked about fish oil a ton in the past on the show. I don't know if you guys think we need a roundtable on fish oil, but there's Cressy did also. Cressy had a decent article on fish oil that I don't know why it was linked to me, but Lee, you were about to say something.
I think her question was in regards to a non-animal oil, because
yes,
that's kind of where I think she was going. If so, there's sheep oil. There's a lot of and there's also flax as well. That's a non-animal based. And as far as the protein powders, if you're getting a little tired of soy, then you can go with rice or pea protein powders. They're getting a lot cheaper, and their protein content's good. So that's just a little quick to throw out there for that. But I think she was looking for an alternative that wasn't animal-based, and you can do sheep's, and there's been a lot of weird research with that, but that's turned out okay, and you can also do flax.
Indeed, I dropped the ball on that one, sorry. Let's hit the next question about protein.
Hi, guys. I have two questions. First one is about distended lower stomach, the bloat. What are the best ways to reduce that? And then my second question regards different types of proteins. I have recently been changing my diet to more vegetarian options and was looking at rice protein and was wondering what your thoughts were on that and how well your body can utilize that. Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
Lee's psychic, folks. She didn't know that question was coming up.
What was the first thing?
I couldn't. Something about lower stomach bloating. I couldn't really understand it, so I was hoping someone else could pick it up.
Well, I don't know if he was referring to like the bloat he would get from eating certain protein products, or just
possibly
he had a distended abdomen and he was just wondering how to get rid of it. I wasn't sure what he was referring to.
I'm not either.
Assuming
well, call us back and be a little bit more detailed, and we'll hit it next week.
But rice protein's good. So
awesome. Yeah. By the way, this is a nice post, Lee. I missed this one the first time around. This is a really good post on how to find how to hire a personal trainer.
Yeah.
That's a really nice post.
Thank you. I'm coming up with a test. It's fun. What you can like ask the personal trainer. It's going to be good times. Yeah.
Sweet.
But, sorry, it's fun.
Let's hit up the next question.
This is Tony Janik.
Oh, whoops, that's wrong. Sorry.
Son of a bitch.
No, we're even. All right, not. Nah, seriously, next voicemail. About fit day.
Hey, Kevin. This is Nate Turborg. Thanks for applying to my request about the phone number here via Facebook. Not sure if I'm going to be in time for this week, but regardless, that's okay. I am. I'm wondering. I'm calling about. I heard Fit Day referenced before, and was wondering if there's an equivalent of a program like that that you're familiar with, or know anybody who might have used something that is Mac compatible. I wasn't able to find anything like that for a Mac, so may or may not be show worthy. But even if you were able to shoot me any feedback, Terborg is my last name, T-E-R-B-O-R-G. But just wondering, I guess, and first and foremost, is that, I guess, a good way, a recommended way? I'm not, I feel like I need something like that to track my calorie intake. In the past, I've just done it using Excel and just doing it the old-fashioned way and doing the math myself. But any input on that would be fantastic. Thanks.
Well, let's talk briefly about FitDay. FitDay has an application that you can download for your PC, which will allow you to do what they have on their website just offline and on your desktop. And I did do some research and looking for any calorie counting applications for the Mac. A lot of them that I saw were very basic. You had to input everything, like all your foods. There was nothing that was already in there set up like FitDay has on their website. So I don't know if you guys have any other recommendations, but I would just say just use the FitDay.com. You can log on to it from anywhere in the world, and it allows you to save any kind of custom foods on there, and that's what I'll be using in the next couple of weeks to keep a close eye on things. I don't know if any of you guys are... I know Tony and John are not on Macs, but I don't know if Lee is or not.
Yeah, I was just Googling to see if it uses Mac, but it doesn't. I'm going to check one more, but I don't think it does.
It's because
I'm
not people aware who use of... Macs are usually in better shape, I think.
It'd be an interesting study. Yeah, it doesn't use that either. I don't know of any that use Mac.
Bummer.
So that are, kind of more advanced, but there's a lot of onlines that you can use.
Calorie King.
Yeah, is another one. And so, sorry.
All right. Well, hopefully you don't mind logging on to the internet, because obviously you had to send that voicemail. So that's it for the voicemails this week. We have a couple more, but we'll save them for next week. We're going to be right back around the corner with the rest of the mailbag. If you want to get the best tasting protein powder out there, you're going to head to blackstarlabs.com with new low discounted prices on all their products at blackstarlabs.com. Check them out today. I know you're going to love their protein just as much as I do. First question in the written mailbag is for John. Hey guys, this is a question for John. After I finish a meditation session, about 30 minutes, I stand up and my ankles and knees are so stiff that I can barely walk. I use a modified lotus position, feet underneath my knees instead of on top of them. That's just freakish if you can sit like that. And I prop myself on 3 pillows. Do you have any suggestions on how to be able to sit better without the pain/stiffness? or should I just give up my quest for enlightenment and be content with my post-deadlifting blackouts that show me some light, but not necessarily the light? Thanks. Eddie R. from New York.
Well, I think that for those of you that aren't familiar with the lotus position, it's kind of the standard position that you might think of when it comes to meditation, sitting cross-legged. The feet are on top of the knees, and you've got your hands turned upwards. That would be supination on the knees. So that kind of typical in the movies, this is the grandmaster meditating kind of position. It's a difficult position, and it requires a lot of flexibility. I would suspect that the issues that Eddie's having could be some mobility and flexibility issues, because you do need a huge amount of flexibility and external rotation flexibility in order to sit in that position comfortably. And there could be some soft tissue in the sense of co-contraction at the joint. There could be extra pressure on the joint as well because of that position, especially if you're not flexible enough. And something that I thought was interesting in the question, I know he was kind of kidding at the end about deadlifting and getting blackouts, although if he's not, Eddie, you really need to work on your breathing if you're blacking out. But if you're trying to get good at deadlifts and you're trying to get good at lotus position, you may be doing yourself a disservice, because they're two very different types of things that are on the ends of the spectrum there. So you're trying to ride two horses at once, and you're probably not getting anywhere too quickly on either of them. So you're going to have to kind of decide for yourself, do I want to practice meditation as it's demonstrated in more of a yoga type of meditation, or do I want to get better at deadlifting, which would stiffen the body and not necessarily make it more flexible, unless you're going for that, which again might interrupt your overall weight and what you're able to do in the deadlift. That's why powerlifters use suits and things like that to increase the stiffness of the body. So what you're trying to do is, you're by doing the lotus position, you're decreasing the stiffness. So it's just kind of two opposite things. What I would say, I mean, it may require some mobility drills and mobilization. It may require some kind of almost like getting out of the position and almost warming up to get back to standing. But I think a much more an easier way to do it, unless you're specifically interested in yoga, there are many different positions that you can meditate in. My background in meditation was more from a Taoist standpoint, which has a lot of similarity with yoga and Indian meditation, but we will do things in movement, and we also start basic positions even in just a sitting position with your back straight, feet flat on the floor, and your hands touching your knee. The point of meditation is not necessarily a body rest, it's a mind rest. So you're not really trying to kind of sit there in this slouched position or whatever. You're actually supposed to be in a very good, comfortable position for your body. The idea is to rest your mind, to rest the thoughts and your emotions, so that you're more able to focus on task. So if that's the case, then you really don't need to be in the lotus position. So if it's causing you pain, I would suggest either taking smaller periods of meditation until you build up the flexibility, or just take an easier position for yourself, like a seated position. And that's it. Thank you, Kevin.
Well done.
That was good. Question. It was very thorough. I was just actually doing some behind the scenes research, and Lee pointed out a program called Perfect Diet Tracker to us that is available for the Mac as well as the PC and Linux. And I was playing around with it, and it looks like it does have the ability to search the internet as well. If you type in something like eggs, and it will just search, like, it'll find eggs from McDonald's, eggs from, you know, Denny's, and Eggland eggs, many different brands. So it might be a very good choice. It is $50, and you can get it at byoni.com. So it's worth a look if you wanted to check that out, so.
You know what, Kevin? I really tried hard to give a good answer. I even posted blog posts. What more do I have to do to win your favor? So hurt.
Next question comes from Steve or Lee. Hey, Kevin, could you guys talk a little bit about carb cycling? I know you have mentioned it in the past, but it seems like you always end up with the answer that it depends on the person, which doesn't really help as a listener. I am pretty lean. I don't know what percent body fat, but you can see my veins sticking out of my arms and legs. The only thing is that there is a little bit of fat around the stomach and that I can't get rid of, and it pisses me off. My diet is about as clean as I can get it. Steel-cut oats, eggs, lean meats, grass-fed beef, tuna, nuts, lots of veggies and fruits, cottage cheese. I want to go on a carb cycling diet to hope to get rid of the last bit of fat. I was wondering if you guys could give me a simple rundown on how to go about it. I've tried to do some research online and has been unsuccessful. Some places say to go high carb on days you do lots of cardio. Some say to go high carbs on rest days. I usually run 4 times a week, including long runs of 10 plus miles on Sunday. I run 10Ks and half marathons as a hobby. And I usually lift 3 to 4 times a week. I was just wondering how my carb cycling eating pattern should correlate with my workout pattern, and whether the rest days should be on no carb or high carb days. Also, what is quote no carb? Like, how many grams of carbs are we talking about on no carb days? Sorry about the long question, but I think this is a topic of confusion, and I really would appreciate your help, Steve. And Steve actually asked a question that I asked Lee as well. What are no carb days? But should we do a brief summary of carb cycling, or what, like a general breakdown of what a carb cycling diet would look like?
There's, you know, to some degree, there isn't a set in stone, which is probably why he's having a hard time, because there's not like carb cycling. It's just this. For one, it's a very theoretical thing. I mean, it's not like, you know, we know for a fact that taking carbs on certain days during certain things is going to do certain things. Everything's based on, well, you know, common sense and some research, and, you know, and then some anecdotal and some just, hey, we threw a big rock and see what happens. And so, you know, what I would recommend the average person doing who is getting into it that didn't want to overcomplicate thing, and what I give to a lot of my clients, and I know that a lot of professionals do this as well who work with carb cycling, is to simply do higher carbs on training days and low or no carbs on non-training days. And what I consider to be a training day is when lifting is involved. So when I say training day, I'm talking about when you're lifting, not necessarily cardio. And carb cycling doesn't also necessarily involve fat loss either. So there's a lot of depends involved in this. So I'm going to try and break it down a little bit, though, based upon his question and how he can achieve his results, regardless of if he's even using carb cycling or not. First, he stated he's eating clean. That's great. But you can eat as clean as you want.
That was awesome. Well, that's nice. I'm sorry. That was great.
It's great, but, you know, it doesn't – eating clean does not equate losing fat. Mm-hmm. It's a common misconception. And, you know, I assure you, my ass can get huge on sweet potatoes and chicken. Okay? Like, it can. Like, if you eat over the necessary quantity that you need for whatever your goals are, it's not going to do anything for you. So the first thing I would do before you even, you know, get into the craziness of that is maybe just now that you're in that last area, because abdominal fat is usually the last area for men, thighs and you know, hips for women. But if you're in that kind of last area, then just focus on making sure that your intake is directly correlated with your needs. Tighten up a little bit in that area. If you were anal there before, become a little bit more anal now, and maybe, you know, or you can simply just take out one portion of a starch carbohydrate, like, you know, take out the oats only, leave everything the same, see what happens, and maybe just that small adjustment, you'll be fine and you'll start to hit your results. Sometimes the more complicated we make it, we're just making it more complicated. We're not getting the results. So before you attack anything, understand that that area is necessary to achieve your goal, regardless of your cycle programs. If you're going to be diving into a cycle program, what I recommend for people doing is, let's say you're doing, theoretically, we're just going to throw out that you're doing a, you know, 3-day-a-week full body. What I would recommend doing is on that 3-day-a-week full body, the 3 days that you do that, hit high carbs and focus on carbs primarily, you know, around your workout. So pre and post, get the majority of them there. What are high carbs? It really depends for you. But let's just say that, you know, in a day you can have 200 grams of carbohydrates based upon what you figured out for your caloric cycle. Then, you know, try and base those 200 grams around your workout times. I usually like a 5-hour window to just kind of make sure that you're getting as much possible. On your off days is really when it's, you know, the most key. And as far as what constitutes no carb, it depends on what kind of diet style you're using. No carb can mean literally nothing, no carbs whatsoever. Like, let's say you're going into a extreme ketogenic diet. You basically would not have any carbohydrates. That you would even keep the veggies on a very base level, fibrous ones only, and of that very small amount. Then you could increase that into different kinds of carb diets. It depends. I think that you need to learn what the different ones are before you really worry about cycling. What's a ketogenic diet? What's a protein sparing modified fast diet? What's a what's just a general low carb diet? You know, low carb for some people is different than others. So there is a lot in there. And I don't want to confuse you, and I know that maybe I'm a little bouncing around here, but the take-home point is the calories count first. Your carb manipulations are going to depend largely upon the kind of training you're doing and the kind of diet setup you have. What I ultimately recommend is for you to not try and set it up yourself and to follow an already maybe pre-laid out program. I've written one with my book. Lyle McDonald has some available that he does. The Ultimate Diet 2.0 is based upon a cycling diet. If you look into Martin Berkham's stuff right now and the IF things that he's doing, he's written out a lot of stuff that has to do with carb cycling. I believe Alan Argon has a free article out about it. Jamie Howe, I think, just wrote something about it as well that's free, completely online. Breaks down. So there's a lot of sources that you can go to find a particular program to follow if you're feeling overwhelmed. But the ultimate take-home point is to watch the caloric intake, and that might get you there without you having to worry about any of this in the first place. I hope that didn't confuse too much, but it's a big question. It's not simple to answer.
That's the best part. You can always just, you know, hit pause, go back a couple minutes, and listen to it again. No, I'm serious. Like that, to be honest, a lot of this discussion has helped make a lot of things, you know, clear for what I'm coming up against, because I'll be doing something very similar.
It's so involved, and it depends on, you know, and then when you throw training in, it's like, are you working on depletions? Mm-hmm. Are you working on, you know, stage preps? Like, there's just so many angles of it. And when you get that involved, at one point people were like, does this even matter? And it's like, well, just keep your protein up and try and, you know, keep it times body weight and work out and you should be fine.
Hope
but,
for the best.
You know. Yeah, it depends on how you get into it. And when you start getting into something like that, you're best to not guess. You're best to just follow a program or to try and really read into that specific type of cycling program best possible. So that's what I recommend.
And what about no-carb days? Because it seems like a lot of programs will have, quote, no-carb days, but all the guidelines are different.
Yeah, it's so flexible because some people, like, for example, you read some people's work and they're like, you can't have any carbs on these days. And then they're like, oh, but eat all the fruit and the veggies you want. And it's like, guess what? Those are carbs. You know, so what you're really saying is no starch. You know, what you're really saying is you can't have any starch carbs those days. You can't have any sweet potatoes. You can't have any oats, things like that.
No donuts.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, and like the reason why particularly low carb or carb cycling programs are so successful is because it's really hard to mess up a chicken breast in the caloric amount, but it's really easy to mess up rice. You know, you can be off by hundreds of calories with certain starch carbohydrates by accident based upon, you know, serving things, and it really impedes your results. But it's really hard to mess up chicken and broccoli. I mean, it's not really much you can do there. You know, it's not likely that you're going to be over. So when it comes to no carbs, it just depends. Some people think that you can just have fibrous veggies, no fruit. Some say you can have fruit. Some say you just can't have any starches. And some say you can't have any at all. You can't have any, you know, whatsoever. It's just basically bacon and a burger, and that's all you get. So it really just varies on who wrote the program and what their intentions with that program are.
Tony, I'm going to throw you the next question.
Okay.
and this is, you know, kind of a very general question, but my teenage daughter wants to start coming to the gym. What are some exercises that she can do? So what are, you know, beginner exercises that are, you know, not necessarily, I guess, for women? I don't want to lock it into that demographic. But.
Right, right. Well, this is one of those, while it's a succinct question, it is also a very loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty reluctant to say, to give anyone advice on, oh, what my daughter wants to start training, so what can I have her do? Because we have to take it in the context of, number one, how old she is. Number two, does she play any sports? Number three, has she just been sitting on her butt for X amount of time? You know, any postural issues, injury history, et cetera, et cetera. So assuming that we have a clean bill of health here and she's been through a proper screening and whatnot, I really think, you know, what we do with teenage girls that come to our place is just get them, you know, learning and movement patterns. So working on technique and form. You know, I'm not one of those strength coaches that's like, everyone's going to deadlift, everyone's going to squat, and that's all it is. You know, yeah, certainly I like to get them to that point, but I'm also a realist. Like, I don't see the point in, you know, okay, you're going to pull from the floor today because we're just getting strong. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm all about getting people strong, but not everyone is meant to go in at day one and put a barbell on their back or put a barbell on the floor and lift it. You know, so there are definitely certain progressions that need to be taken with certain individuals. But, you know, in dealing with teenage girls, like, you know, they're going to be very intimidated. Like, they, you know, grown women don't like going into a weight room, let alone a teenage girl surrounded by, you know, guys that are just grunting and being as loud as they can. So, you know, going in there with her and just showing her basic movement patterns that she can do, like, I mean, just certain lunge variations or body weight squats or, you know, just doing flat dumbbell presses, doing some push-ups off the pins, you know, just really basic movement patterns that get her comfortable with weights, you know, and as she gets a little bit more confident, then we can start adding in trap bar deadlifts or rack pulls or, you know, pull-ups, band-assisted pull-ups. I mean, just stuff like that that will help her boost her confidence a little bit. So, I mean, I'm like you. Like, I don't like to categorize people by, okay, you're a man, this is how you're going to train. You're a woman, this is how you're going to train. But with a teenage girl, like, you do, there is kind of a gray area that you have to be careful with as far as an intimidation factor. So, you know, trying not to get too technical with her in the beginning as far as doing deadlift squats, you know, any Olympic lift variations or anything like that. So, again, just basic movement patterns and, you know, dynamic flexibility drills, stuff like that, you know, and then she should be good to go.
Yeah, this is one thing that I've seen. It's coming from the line of, you know, boyfriends who bring their girlfriends or, you know, guys that bring their sisters into the weight room or, you know, even just anyone in general. Don't expect them to just follow the same program as you, because I see people bring their girlfriends in and they have them doing the same exercise that they're doing and they're following like some shit program for muscle and fitness or flex.
And I see that all the time, and it you know, in a few commercial gyms I've been in, and you can always tell because it's some big meathead guy
and he's carrying around the fucking magazine with him. Like, what the fuck, yeah, man? Shit, you can't fucking, you know, remember the program? Kind of, oh god.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the girls just
wow.
Walk around.
Wow.
Sorry, there's this dude.
That was amazing. He's all political with Tracy Anderson, and then he goes...
I know, right? That's exactly what I was
crazy.
Thinking.
Sorry, I'm going to mute myself for a minute.
Wow.
He even, like, censored himself when he was, like, reading the question before.
Yeah, he did. I thought that was hysterical. For the listeners, there was an F-bomb in one of the questions, and he kind of paused, and he wants to put together a good show, and then you mention muscle and fitness, and he loses his freaking mind.
Well, there's just some dude where...
We're live!
Yeah.
We're doing live!
Tony, you were saying.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, I know what you're saying, because there'll be some big meathead guy, and then his girlfriend's just kind of...
And she's like, yeah.
Walking behind him, you know, doing what he's doing. And, you know, I believe me, like, I'm all for women lifting heavy stuff. Like, I love it. Like, we have a great group of women that come into our facility. You know, they've really bought into the mentality that they need to be lifting heavy stuff.
Yeah, but you're throwing them into
great.
The fire.
It's great.
Know?
It's absolutely phenomenal. But with a teenage girl, like you just can't do that. Like you really just have to be diligent with kind of easing them into it. And if she is an athlete, I mean, of course, like she needs to be working posterior chain. She has to be taking in precautions with ACL injuries, and I mean they're just woefully weak. So I mean, yes, I'm all for them doing the big compound movements, you know, but at the same time, you know, more often than not, on day one, you're not just going to walk in and they're going to do, you know, squat, deadlift, and et cetera, et cetera. But at the same end of the spectrum, I don't like girls going in on day one and doing leg extensions and leg press and sit ups and stuff like that. So, you know, just, I mean, take it slowly, show her some basic movement patterns, body weight stuff, and, you know, you'll be good to go. She'll be fine.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to throw in real quick, too. I mean, it's good that she wants to go to the gym. If you've got her going, don't scare her away. I think that happens a lot. Women deal with very different issues than guys do when it comes to going to the gym. And guys can be intimidated and then just kind of get, you know, I just got to lift more weight or I got to do whatever. I mean, they'll sort of psych themselves into it because they know they're supposed to do it. Women get all kinds of ridiculous ideas from the media, Tracy Anderson. And, you know, so when you're trying to get them into the gym, there's an intimidation factor I find more often than guys necessarily will deal with. So to some extent, you know, make the gym a friendly environment for them too. So, you know, if you're deadlifting, if you're squatting, these are great ideas. But if it seems intimidating to someone, just like kind of what Tony was saying, you don't have to throw it down their throat just yet. Find the things that they do enjoy, work in a few of the things that you think they could benefit from, and then maybe slowly but surely bring them over to, you know, what maybe you would consider to be a better approach to weightlifting. But
Son of a bitch.
You had to bring up her name, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. but yeah, you know what I mean? Just because I find that, and I've been guilty of it too, you know, with people that I'm friends with or my girlfriend too. She doesn't really love to work out, and definitely in the past I've been, well, you should do this, you should do that, and you come across as being, you know, this overbearing individual because you do have experience, and it's going to turn people off of the gym. So you've got her there. That's a great start. Go easy. Give her things that will be easy for her to accomplish, that she'll enjoy, and as she builds up that momentum, that's when you can start to slowly introduce other ideas as well. But then again, she may just be all for it, and she'd be like, no, I want to squat and deadlift, and then you got yourself a great situation going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I dealt with this with a woman yesterday doing her eval. She wasn't a teenage girl, but, I mean, she was a woman. And, you know, she came in very – I mean, it took her son has been training with us for quite some time, and she's been kind of – scuffing at the heels as far as coming in herself, and the intimidation factor was there. She's just really scared to come in and train in that environment. And, you know, when she walked in, I made it a point of telling her, like, listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you the stuff you've been doing is wrong. I mean, in my head, I'm like, oh my God, that's so stupid, you know, like what you've been doing. But it's like, my job isn't to sit here and tell you that everything you've been doing is insanely wrong. My job is to, you know, tell you, like, yeah, you know, anything she's that people enjoy doing that get them moving, I'm all for, you know. But certainly, I mean, as a fitness professional, there's stuff I know that work better or was more efficient. And my job, you know, with her was just to be like, get her comfortable with the environment and stuff that she needs to be doing. But at the same time, under the context of like, yeah, we're going to be working up towards this stuff in the long run that I want her to be doing. But to throw everything down her throat from day one right off the bat, it's just gonna turn them off. So that's a great point that John made about, you know, as far as throwing stuff down people's throats right off the bat. I mean, it's just gonna turn them off. So you know, you just gotta take things slow, and then, you know, and gradually as they get more confident, as they get more proficient, you know, they'll want to be there, and they'll want to, you know, start doing the more fun stuff. So that's at least been my experience.
I want to quickly address a letter from Jen in New Jersey. She says, I'm an amateur fitness competitor who trains somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 hours per week. Let me just say, I don't do this all year round. I am not crazy. I started with heavy training about 8 weeks ago since my first show is April 11th, so good luck. I was just wondering if you have any videos or will be adding any videos of proper foam rolling techniques for post-workout stretch and recovery. I'm taking a beating on my body, and as I would love to get body work more often, that can get quite extensive, and since I split half my time training and half my time working, the money is just not there for it. I tried to do a search on YouTube for foam rolling, basically just going on and talking about foam rolling a little bit. I just wanted to address, we're not going to put up any real videos of foam rolling, or at least not a complete set of that, and for dynamic warm-up stuff, because plain and simple, there's already two DVDs that, you know, cover them out there, and they're relatively cheap. You can, for the foam rolling stuff, Magnificent Mobility with Eric Cressy and Mike Robertson, you can pick up the DVD. I'm pretty sure it's you can get it on Cressy's site. It's $50 and it's worth every penny. But you gonna say something, John?
Oh no, I was just agreeing with you. It's still a great resource.
Yeah, and also Inside Out for the foam rolling is outstanding. So just Magnificent Mobility for the dynamic warm-up stuff, and Inside Out for hitting the foam rolling, especially for upper body. And, you know, if you look hard enough on Eric's blog and Tony's blog, there usually are some foam rolling videos that pop up from time to time.
Yeah, I was just going to say...
And soft tissue for... You have an article, don't you?
Oh no! Yeah, I mean, I did the article with the soft tissue work, and I mean, Eric and Mike wrote an article on the foam rolling called "Feel Better for $10."
Yeah,
I wrote one using a tennis ball, a lacrosse ball, called "Soft Tissue Work for Tough Guys." But
I'll
also, Eric
that.
And myself put up like a 6-7 minute video on YouTube going through our foam rolling series. That it's under his name on YouTube. I think if you YouTube like Cressy Performance Foam Rolling, it will come up. But I also put it up on my blog, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. The YouTube link is the video is right in the blog. But it basically has me going through like a quick, I think it's like 6.5 minutes of just our quick foam rolling series that we had people do at Cressy Performance. So that could be something that she could look into.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'll make sure to find those and post links to those in the show notes. What do you guys think? Should we take one more question for the discussion about the seminar?
Sure. We're all very enthusiastic about that.
I got to pick one. It's got to be good.
Only if Lee answers it with one word answer.
All right, fine. This is for...
Only Lee can do it.
This is for Lee. I would like advice on recovery drinks for post-cardio and meal replacements that aren't so loaded in sugar. I have been buying at Black Star Labs. You still have the discount code I can use when I purchase? Answer to that is no. This stuff is so cheap now they took out the discount code. Thanks. Any help is great. Jenny Miller. One word.
Protein powder.
Oh, that's two.
It's the best I could do.
I would just say food, like eat whole food.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I could have said food.
There, eat. Yeah. Eat.
Protein. Like, honestly, like, as much as I like post-workout drinks, you don't need
to drink it.
A post-workout drink.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
just,
I mean,
just eat food.
Chewing's fun.
Yeah, it's not necessary, just food.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you really wanted a shake, I mean, just protein powder without sugar. I mean, if it really, you know. If you run it a shake. There you go.
Yes. And
at Black Star Labs.
Of course. You know, just addressing that. I have been getting some emails from us, so I'm just going to address it on the show, that the Fit10 code no longer works. If you go to blackstarlabs.com, you'll see they like lower the price of UltraPeptide 2.0 from $28 to $22. So you end up getting like much better deal anyways. So just in the comments section say, you know, heard from the Fitcast, just so it makes them know that you're coming from the show, just so it works out that way, and it makes me happy. All right, well, yes, and that way they send me UltraPeptide 2.0, and because I consume it a lot. All right, well, that's it. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back around the corner with a roundtable of the Mike Boyle Strength Conditioning Winter Seminar. Be right back.
Michael Boyle's StrengthCoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the Internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? Then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the Internet, strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
We're going to be talking about the Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning Seminar, the winter seminar that we just attended last week. That's why we weren't live, per se, to do the show. So I don't have my handout because I loaned it to a coworker. But we'll just quickly run through the presentations that we saw. I think the first one was Brijesh Patel. Oh, and by the way, John literally almost got us kicked out because he was making comments and causing us to laugh, and it was just, don't sit next to John if you don't want to get in trouble in class. That's all I have to say.
No, literally, like, John is the guy, like, because I know I was sitting with Eric and Anna, and you guys were out in the back in the corner. Like, I can listen to, like, people, like, doing their presentations, and John is the guy in the background going, yeah.
No, it's like, yes, that's right.
let alone, like, the laughing part, but you know, when you agree with somebody, and you're like, in your head, you're like, oh, yeah, you know, that's a good point. But John was, like, instead of doing it in his head, John's a guy that's like, yeah. But out loud, it was yep. Completely hilarious.
Or I'll just like, if someone like has a funny video, I'll just go, ha. See,
that's totally true.
So,
my roommate in college once accused me, like, he thought that I learned how to laugh from like a soundtrack of laughter, like ha 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 ha, like that.
Well, anyways, I think we should also mention that we did meet a couple fans, and it was really cool meeting some of the community out there. And thanks for coming up to us. And those, I got some emails from people who didn't come up and say hi. You know, next time we're at a seminar, please feel free. I don't think we didn't have our bandoliers of ammo and guns around our back today, so don't be afraid to come up and say, I don't know. I'm looking at Arnold Schwarzenegger right now, so I had that commando picture pop into my head. But
and apparently don't sit next to me either.
And don't sit next to John. Leave a gap of...
Yeah. Although I could have told you that.
Although a good place to sit next to John is when you go out to dinner. Trust me. Him and I were... had a good time out to dinner the night that we went out. And you know what I'm talking about, John.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I learned quite a few things from John at that dinner about, like, how to... Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that, probably. But, John, you know what I'm talking about just, like, leaving the door open?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Lee, feel free... feel free to make comments or...
Lee's just like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
Yeah, inside jokes aren't fun on a podcast.
No, they're not. They're not. I think we've actually been accused of that on quite. iPod.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit about the presentation. So Brijesh Patel first talked, I think he was the first one to talk, and he covered basketball players. A lot of the presentations focused on one sport predominantly, which honestly I wasn't too happy about, because I like it when it's more, you know, broad and you can apply it to every different aspect. Like Brijesh previously in the years has just talked about, you know, 25 things I've learned in the past year, and those are things that I was able to bring, you know, into the gym the next day and use with my clients. But I don't know if was there anything that popped up for you guys in Brijesh's presentation that you wanted to mention?
Well, I liked a lot of his drills. I mean, I thought his presentation was a lot of demonstration type of stuff that he was showing videos for in the PowerPoint, and I thought there were a lot of really great mobility drills, a lot of good thoughts in there. I mean, it was a very nice overall presentation, and while he did focus on basketball because that's what he coaches, you can take a lot of those things and transfer them to other areas. So I like that presentation a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with John. Like, I mean, I know, I mean, Brajesh talked about basketball, Eric talked about baseball, Boyle mm-hmm. talked about hockey, but even in the context of people talking about a specific sport that they coach or participate with, like, me, in my head, like, I always listen to a presentation and see how I can apply stuff to whoever I'm dealing with at my facility. So even though Brajesh talked predominantly about basketball, like, he did talk about a lot about hip mobility,
ankle mobility.
And how basketball, you know, they have a limited range of motion, so they have to work a lot on hip mobility. And that's when he went into a lot of drills that he had. You know, they talked about ankle mobility and how important that is with basketball players. And then, you know, in all honesty, like, when people walk into our facility and we screen them and assess them, a lot of people have atrocious ankle mobility.
Okay.
So regardless if they're a basketball player. You know, and he went in to talk about T-spine mobility and how important that is. You know, basketball players have atrocious posture and they have horrible lower backs and shoulders, and how working on thoracic spine mobility is important. You know, he also talked to him about, hopefully I'm saying this right, is how we stop dictates how we start,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was an awesome, simple point that he made.
Well, let's talk about that in the context.
Learning how to stop and absorb force, is going to dictate how efficiently that person is going to start when you're talking about change of motion and jumping up for a rebound or what have you. You know,
right,
so,
and the position too. I mean,
exactly.
It's just,
so yeah. he had a lot of videos of like Michael Jordan shooting a shot and like hip angle and all and or shin angle and ankle and all this stuff. And Brajesh is a great speaker. Like he is a smart guy. And if anyone ever gets an opportunity to listen to him speak, I absolutely. And what's nice about Brajesh, he doesn't bullshit around either. Like, he's very sincere and very steadfast on his beliefs and what he feels works and what he feels doesn't. And I appreciate that. He'll talk about something, he's very passionate about it. It's like, this is what we do. It's in my experience, this is what works. I know it works. You know, we take it for what it is, and mm-hmm. You know, and I appreciate that, and the fact that his speaking and how he reiterates his information out to people. But his presentation was great, even though it was specifically towards basketball players and how he prepares them for their in season and whatnot. I got a lot out of it just from a mobility mm-hmm. standpoint, as far as how to work the hips and all the different videos that he put up.
Yeah, I actually thought one of the best parts of his presentation besides all that was just at the very end for 5 minutes or 2 minutes out of the whole presentation, he talked about just training to failure at the end and body weight stuff, because when you're dealing with athletes, there's
a competition.
Yeah, exactly. It's a huge mental component, and I couldn't agree more. And it's funny because we sit here and we talk about, you know, proper movement, everything has to be perfect, everything has to be right, and that's true, but then you get them on the floor and all of that may go out the window, certainly in the fourth quarter, where you've got to just, you know, dig deep and continue playing or whatever it might be. And those are the points where it's that mental aspect that gets you through the game, and those are where the best players shine. So I thought that was great.
Now let's go to the next presentation, which I believe was John Paloff. And he again, well, his presentation was more of, hit on a lot of different subjects. Was there anything that stood out for you guys? Well, in terms of, I mean, he focused predominantly on hips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he brought up a lot of points on femoral acetabular impingement, which is stuff I've been reading up a lot on in the past, and basically talking about CAM lesions and pincer lesions. Basically, and John's probably be a lot better person talking about that stuff than me, but talking about how, you know, with those femoral acetabular impingement and how that's going to affect, I mean, your hips are going to be just locked up, and talking about how we can work around that. John, I'll actually have you go into more about that because you're a little bit more of a anatomy geek than I am, but I thought it was great.
Well, I think that the general gist of what he talked about, I thought it was great, because everyone kind of falls into this category where we say, all right, dysfunctional movement, and this is happening and that's happening. This muscle is turning on too much. This muscle not enough. But the point of his talk was really saying, you know what, there don't forget structural issues that go beyond the muscle dysfunction. It's not always muscle dysfunction leading to poor movement. Sometimes it's the way that the individual is built, or something that has occurred within the individual. You know, he talked about the accident background of like a lumbopelvic dysfunction and how you can cause issues to the hips themselves, which are more like skeletal rather than muscular. And so you're going to see the results in a muscular functioning, you know, resulting in dysfunction. But the fact of the matter is, really what you're doing is you're going to have to work around it. You're not going to cure it. And I think that especially for, I don't know, I guess maybe trainers or even coaches that kind of get into the, you know, corrective exercise realm, so a lot of times you kind of forget that you know what, there may be some times where someone presents with something that you're not going to be able to fix. And so you have to be aware of those situations, not try to do something that not only won't work, but in fact you may be doing them a disservice if you keep trying to push them through something that they're not capable of doing. So he described two different scenarios where you might have a hip dysplasia, or, you know, again, the acetabular, you know, issue, like almost like a bone spurring in the hip, and that's going to change the way that you fundamentally will be able to move, and certain exercises will make it worse. So I thought it was a really good talk.
The next presentation was with Chris Nowitzki, who some may remember from the Tough Enough, the MTV reality series, where many people, I think they had like 12 people who were trying to win a spot as a WWF then, but now WWE superstar. And he talked about concussions and really the... And to be honest, I actually you know, his presentation really hit pretty hard just by this mere statistics that he started shooting out there about concussions in athletes and how athletes aren't reporting concussions. And the effects that, you know, multiple concussions are having on one's brain, and the life-altering effects of that. And he has set up a nonprofit foundation where they're going around to schools around the country and talking with coaches and trainers about, you know, what to look out for in your athletes when it comes to seeing if a concussion did indeed occur. And, you know, making sure that you have your players are responsible to see if one of their teammates, if they do seem to be showing the signs of a concussion, to get them off the field to make sure they don't suffer two concussions in the same game, which could be very traumatic. And, you know, going from football players to wrestlers, and just overall looking at just what the massive effects of people who've had six concussions, a dozen concussions, and some athletes that can't even remember how many concussions that they've had. But I really enjoyed his presentation. I'm glad that Mike was able to add him in at last minute. I don't know if either of you guys have anything you want to add to that.
I really do the humming a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I just noticed that, I mean, you were talking, I'm like, Yeah.
Yeah.
They do that.
Well, the next presentation was...
No, that was a great presentation, though. I thought that was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. The next presentation was, I think it was Mike Robertson.
Yep.
Yeah, Mike Robertson, who actually hit on a lot of core stability stuff. And it was actually, it came in at a perfect time, because a lot of the stuff that he talked about in that presentation was also in part to the T Nation article that he had up a couple weeks prior to that. And I think it was called Combating the Core, something like that. But anything you guys wanted to talk about in regards to Mike's presentation?
Mike is another one of those, he's a very, very, very good public speaker. And he has a very great way of taking really complex information, dumbing it down so pretty much anyone can be like, oh yeah, you know, that makes sense. And his presentation dealt with low back and really nothing. I mean, nothing new. I think a lot of great information that just needs to be reiterated. Yes, thank you. To the lay public and even the trainers and strength coaches, because it's never a bad thing to, you know, relearn stuff that you should be doing with the people you're working with. But he just basically went through the different stages that you have to go through as far as what level people are in regards to their low back injury, making a point of saying there's a continuum of training. You know, you have at one end of the continuum, you have rehab base, and at the other end of the continuum, you have performance base. So, mm-hmm. you know, and that's a fairly long continuum. So, I mean, people are going to be at different points on that continuum, and you have to, as a strength coach or trainer, a fitness professional, you have to be able to recognize and realize where on that continuum the person you're working with is. You know, are they the type of individual that needs to be working on alignment and posture? Do they need to work on motor control? I mean, and even then, it's a pyramid of stuff that you need to work on. At the very top, you have strength, power. At the very bottom, you have alignment and posture. Like, you can't be working on, you know, deadlift and squatting and this and that if the person's posture and alignment is out of whack. I mean, it's just, you're not going to get them better. So, you know, Mike just went through the different stages that he would suggest people should do as far as what you need to concentrate on to get them from this point to this point. Okay, now they're doing that. Now here's what you do to get them from this point to this point. So it was a great presentation and one that I feel a lot of people get a lot of benefit out of.
Well, it's really important for the trainers out there that, you know, that are in the settings where it's not necessarily performance-based. They're just dealing with non-athletes. They're dealing with everyday people where they might not necessarily put those things into consideration when they're training their clients. They don't really look at core stability too much during their assessments, possibly. And mm-hmm. this, you know, I think it's going to be really good for some people when it comes to, you know, maybe we have to start a couple steps back and a couple stages back than where you would normally like to start with a client, where, you know, possibly they're not going to get those great results in those first 2 or 3, 4 weeks, but you have to build them up and build a sturdy foundation before you start throwing the more complex stuff at them.
Well, again, it also comes down to the fact that you need to set people up for success or yeah. get them good at doing something. Because, you know, you get a lot of people coming in, oh, my back hurts, I mean, I've been dealing with this back pain.
Absolutely.
And it sucks, and, you know, and they've just dealt with constant failure for however long they've been dealing with it. So, you know, if, you know, with lower back people, I mean, really it's about getting them to come in and setting them up for success and having them be successful with something, you know, then they're like, oh, okay, I can do this. And then you just kind of build off of that.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, Kevin.
Well, it's just like a lot of trainers, like, it doesn't look fancy to do core stability stuff. But one of my clients came in, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after we started working with him, and he comes up to me and like, dude, you know, I've been waking up in the morning and my back doesn't hurt when I wake up now. Like, and that was worth every cent that he paid for those training sessions just to say, you know, I woke up in the morning and I don't have immense back pain.
Yeah.
Exactly. Awesome. Like that.
I mean, a lot of stuff isn't sexy or exciting, but it's stuff that people need to be doing. And a lot of your job as a trainer is to get people to do what they need to be doing, not what they want to be doing, and to get them to understand that.
The next presentation was by Eric Cressy, and he went over a lot of the stuff that, Tony, that you guys do at Crush Performance in terms of the assessment of pitchers and when you're looking at internal rotation. And Gerd, do you want to go into that?
Oh, I left for that presentation. I listen to Eric every day talk, so I actually took off. I'm being stupid. He talked about a lot of the stuff we do when you know, we get guys coming in and looking at shoulder range of motion. GIRD is what we call it, G-I-R-D, glenohumeral internal rotation deficit, and how we address it. You know, what we need to, you know, certain corrective exercises we do to correct it, stuff, getting people to realize that, you know, you got to look at the sport the person plays and what, you know, from a strength conditioning standpoint, okay, what stuff they should be doing, what stuff they shouldn't be doing. You know, like, I don't like to make lists of, like, X amount of exercises that are atrocious and X that what are good. But, you know, with baseball, I mean, there's certain exercises we don't have people do. We don't have them to straight bar bench press. We don't have them to do upright rows. We don't do any back squatting. Yes, we do squat them. We just don't do a straight bar back squat. So that's where safety squat bar, giant camber bar, front squats, trap bar deadlift come into play. You know, we went into all the stretching we do with our pitchers, like when they do post-training stretching and stuff like that. So it was a good presentation, and I mean, certainly that it won't have a lot of applicability towards a general population, but again, it was one of those presentations that you can kind of look at and
you can take bits and pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, getting baseball tends to be a sport, I think more so than most, where maybe basketball would be another one, where getting the guys to buy into the mentality that you need to be lifting. Mm-hmm. They think that lifting isn't going to get – I mean, pitchers think the only way they're going to get better is by pitching more. Basketball players think the only way they're going to get better is by playing – pick up basketball during the summer and doing and playing more basketball. So baseball and maybe to a degree basketball too are two sports where – you know, they're, it's kind of behind the curve as far as strength and conditioning. And, you know, we're lucky in that Cressy Performance, the baseball's kind of fallen to our niche, and guys are – we had a great offseason, and all our pro guys are going in, and we're looking for really big summers out of them, and even with our high school kids. So, yeah, we're looking forward to good things, and it was a great presentation.
In the final presentation, Mike Boyle did, and he focused again predominantly on hockey players, but there's some good things that you could take out of there and bring into the general population or to other sports. John, what were your thoughts in his presentation?
Yeah, there was one thing that he mentioned that just I thought was brilliant. I'm trying to look through it. I mean, he just kind of said it as an aside. And it was, like, every time you listen to Mike Boyle talk, you walk away with something going like, wow, that was just – that was perfect. You know, I don't remember what it was. Wish I could remember. I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't because I was probably messing with you at that point. Oh, man.
Well, I'll say something while you're thinking of it. But yeah. The way that I've noticed from Mike, you know, ever since that I talked to him – okay, do you want to talk about that now?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, finish. I'm good.
Mike was at Ryan Lee's boot camp a couple years ago, actually 3 years ago at this point. And, you know, it was very much like it was like having a discussion with your father, which just sounds really weird. But when he come, it's like he's not intimidating. You know, he like comes down and he's just like, you know, we're talking shop. And I just feel like it's just a lot more, you know, it's better than some guy going up there and saying like, yeah, I'm the fucking bee's knees and I'm going to just tell you stuff. You're going to listen and that's going to be it. But that's why I tend to enjoy Mike's presentations quite a bit. He's just got a great personality for speaking. So, John, what were you going to say?
It was the analogy about the peas in a car accident.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So he kind of said it as a side. He was talking about finding dysfunctions and finding the faults of an athlete and their movements and whatever. And he just kind of as an aside gave this, analogy to you go to the grocery store and you buy a bag of green peas. And then on the way home, you get into a car accident. And then CSI Boston shows up. And they're trying to figure out why you got into a car accident, and they see all these green peas all over the inside of the car, and they say, oh, it must have been the green peas. That's what got him into a car accident. And it's like, no, you got into a car accident, and there are green peas flew everywhere in your car. His point was that you're looking for these little details and these little weird explanations as to why something isn't working. You need to look at the big picture. You need to see exactly what's happening with your athlete or with your client or whatever and stop looking for, oh, you know what? You've got this little dysfunction on your pinky toe. I'll bet you anything that's radiating up to your shoulder and that's why you're having pain. It's not. You know? So I just thought that was just a great way to kind of tie in that idea of don't micromanage what's going on with the athlete. Make sure that everything – the big stuff is working and stop looking for the little things because the little things oftentimes either don't affect the athlete or will work themselves out just through proper training.
And lastly, Mike did a Mike Robertson did like a private seminar at Crescent Performance. Crescent Performance did the morning after, where he kind of went through the bulletproof knees approach to fixing Tony's knees.
Yeah, basically, it's like what you mentioned earlier with Lee. It's a little bit of accountability, and we're the hardest person to train is yourself. So, Mike took me through a kind of an impromptu assessment and just kind of told me I need to take a little bit of a grenade approach to my soft tissue work and really hammer away at the foam rolling every day and really paying more attention to doing prolonged static stretching throughout the day. Which I have been doing. So not doing like little quick little 20-30 second stretches, but literally doing like 2-3-5 minute static holds for my hip flexors and whatnot. So we'll see how it works. And I'm actually going to be heading out there next month to his facility to get a little bit more work done. But it was cool to have a little 2 hours of him to ourselves for that time.
Absolutely. He gave me some benching tips too. So the next time.
Yeah.
Don't have a 5 second eccentric when you guys are going for your one rep max.
Yeah, good call.
So you know, the more you know.
Yeah. Knowing's half the battle. Yo Joe.
Yeah, Joe. How's it going, Lee?
She's totally on mute.
Lee Peel.
How can I write you funny things in the background with, you asking me questions right now?
I just want to know how you're doing.
I'm fine, but you ruined my flow of the insult I was getting ready to throw your way, and now I can't do that.
An insult to me? Via the text message?
Okay, I have a question.
I see where you're going with
that. Yeah, whatever. I have a question for you guys. If someone came up, like let's say me, and they said, what did you take away the most from the seminar? Like what do you have one thing that stands out that you're like, that I carried away from and I really enjoyed learning? Each person. Go. How about that? How about them apples?
I'll start, but the first thing that I literally carried away with was a set of Val slides. Which, they're really nice. The Perform Better had a nice discount going, so I got them for $30. My clients love them. They like doing mountain climbers with them. Not. See what I did there?
Yeah, I saw what you did there.
Carried away. All right.
Next.
Actually, come back to me. I'm changing mine. John.
Kevin's very tall.
Taller, yeah, and that's to all you bastards out there that see that bad picture of me with John Williams where I'm the hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, he's very tall.
Tony's tall too.
Yeah, Tony's tall, but I knew that.
Oh, I'm not that tall. I can dress to impress.
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No. No.
That's not my fault. By the way,
he looked like a sophomore going to the frat party. He was just
red shirt showing underneath his dress shirt, and it wasn't
a dress shirt. It was like a sweater that was like his little brother's, and then he's got this red shirt underneath it, and like
he's saying it was tight.
You think?
Sorry, I'll make sure next time I go out, I'll jump into Mr. Rogers' closet and see what
I
can pick
up. Well, at least take his clothes size. Stop shopping at Kids R Us, dude.
I'm okay. It's a large, and I would like to. That's gonna fit perfectly in 3 months. So,
wow.
During the summertime, where I wear sweaters a lot.
Yeah, Lee, you suck. You should have been there. You would have had such a good time with us.
I'm really upset now.
Yeah,
and we would have had two chicks with us too instead of one.
Yep, it's true.
That would have been cool. Tony, what'd you take away?
The one quote that stood out to me through the whole seminar was one by Boyle, and he was talking about specialization, like adolescents, like young kids, and all of a sudden becoming doing specialized sports and just training for that sport. And he was basically just saying, what your kid needs is a friend and a bike. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's completely asinine to have an 11-year-old kid specialize in one sport year-round. What they need is to be playing several sports and just get outside and play. You know, and it's not to say that, you know, we, because at Crestview Performance, we have a handful of kids that age that come in, but they come in once a week, and really all we're working on is a few technique stuff. But half the time, what we're doing is having them push the sled, throwing the football around. You know, when it's nice out, I'm having them push my car. Like, we're just doing, like, fun stuff, throwing the med balls. You know, we're not really focusing on, okay, squat number. You know, today we're going to learn how to deadlift. I mean, we kind of integrate that stuff in, but it doesn't make sense for me. Like, we get parents coming in with these kids, and you know, we had one in the other day who was like, oh, his shoulder – he's had shoulder issues for, you know, the last few months, and he played Little League, then he played summer ball, then he did this team in fall, and then you know, he took maybe a couple weeks off, and then now he started throwing again the other day, and, you know, full bore without any progression. I'm like, he basically threw for a straight year without any. I was like, professional athletes don't even do that. And, you know, so, yeah, the one quote that stuck out to me was, you know, your kid needs a friend and a bike. You know, you don't need to have these kids at that young of an age specializing in any one sport.
I actually I did have two real things to talk about. Even though we kind of glossed over it a little bit, Chris Nowinski's presentation I thought was really cool about
– we didn't gloss over it.
Well, we just kind of, you know, we said, oh, it was really good, and then we went on to the other one. About smashing your head up.
Speak up next time.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just saying. But no, I one of the things that I came away with from his presentation on concussions is just not only how often they actually occur in sport, based, you know, the newer research looking at, I mean, he's talking about 50% of athletes per year, you know, in playing football or getting concussed, and that was pretty amazing. I mean, or even more than 50% back from, and that's compared to numbers that they thought was more like 4 to 5% of athletes per year. So I thought those were amazing numbers. The new research that they're doing that probably asked the question a little bit better is showing incredibly different results, and also the effects that it has on people, numerous concussions and concussions over time, and how it can affect your thinking, your mood, all kinds of stuff. I thought that presentation was really fascinating. And then, of course, John Paloff with talking about sport hernias and his thought process looking at the interplay between the anterior musculature and the abs, and then the adductors of the leg, and how the junction is at the pubogramus, and that kind of interplay between the two. I thought that was awesome.
The biggest thing I probably took out of the weekend, and I say the weekend because it came from the kind of the stuff that Mike did with Tony, and that was just going through some more things in terms of ways of assessing clients when it comes to orientations or the first session. And, you know, I just think it's good to have as many things in your, you know, your tool bag or whatever, in case you have a client that comes in and they're overweight, they can't do a lot of the assessments because, you know, they just physically can't do them, or they're too old, they're young, they have an injury. So Mike and I got to talk a little bit on the side about that, and thanks, John. I'm a tool bag. That's awesome. Great way to end the show. That's pretty much it. And all I have to say to John is,
fuck you, asshole.
And if you don't shut up.
That's not even the good one.
Dude, if you don't shut up.
But I hope you leave enough room for my fist, because I'm going to ram it into your stomach and break your goddamn spine.
Oh, classic.
Trust me.
Classic.
Kevin, I don't think you should even talk anymore. I think you should just speak through Arnold.
Mm.
Really?
Game over. Do it now. Nice night for a walk. Hello, cutie pie.
You know, so I retract my last statement.
Who is your daddy and what does he do? Bullshit.
All right.
All right.
Now, why are you helping these raving psychotics?
All right. Yeah, that's it. Thanks for joining us, Arnold. Next week, we'll have Tony Gentilcore for 22 minutes saying hello. Not, though. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Please make sure to check out theficast.com. You can check us out on iTunes, and please submit more mailbag questions and send in voicemails as soon as possible. The Skype number is 978-633-3488, or if you want to use Skype directly and send me a message that way, just send me an email at kevin@theficast.com, and I will – thanks, John. And I will send you the username to just send that message to. And you can also just email them via an MP3 to kevin@theficast or questions@theficast.com. And that is pretty much it. Any parting words, guys? Awesome. Awesome. No, that's a good way to end it. Thanks for listening. You can check out Tony's stuff at the Boston Herald Step Up blog and GentleCoreTraining.com. Check out John's bi-monthly blog updates at jonathanfast.blogspot.com. And you can also check out acceleratedstrength.com. And also Lee Peel is at avidityfitness.net, where you can check out her new blog post that has nothing to do with the actual DeLorean or Back to the Future, but it is a great article nonetheless that I will be checking out as soon as we finish wrapping up. So that's it. Thanks for listening, and we will see everyone next week. Take care. No snappy ending this week, huh, guys?
I wanted to give Lee a feeling of what it's like to sit next to me in a conference.